You're listening to Greatness Adjacent with Jenny Lind and Mandana Sisco. If it's your first time here, welcome. If you've been with us before, get cozy. Today, Lauren Ekstrom joined me in the studio. Lauren is a yogi, a meditation teacher, and all-around goddess. She and her husband, Travis Elliott, have Inner Dimensions Media, where they have an online yoga and meditation studio. She does work in prisons that is mind-blowing. And everything she says about yoga and meditation make so much sense to me. So I hope you enjoyed today's talk with Lauren Ekstrom. Hi, Lauren Ekstrom.
Hello.
Did I say it right?
You did.
Okay, phew. Did you just come from teaching yoga?
I did.
See? Like, you are the true yogi, walking the walk every day. Do you teach every day?
I used to teach 7 days a week. I did for a very long time. And now I actually have supposedly 2 days off, but I usually spend those 2 days running the other side of our company.
Because you have a whole online studio.
Yeah, so I have an online platform with trainings and programs and then a monthly library of classes that are yoga and meditation. It's awesome. Yeah, so it's called Inner Dimension TV or Inner Dimension Media. And I think what makes it really different is we really look to address people on the six dimensions that make up the human being. And I think it's one of the things that make our classes and my classes and the way that we connected.
Your class, yoga and meditation, I've taken both.
Both.
So phenomenal.
And that every class, what we're really looking to do is address the human body because we start life in a body. So the body is an important thing to keep safe and healthy and to take care of. But we're not just a body. We're also energy, and that's composed of healthy, stable, steady breathing and knowing how to use our breath in a wise way. And then to the layer of the mind and the heart. And they're not separate from each other. I think, you know, in our culture, we can kind of think of the head as its own thing, as somehow separate from our emotional body. There's a funny story that a teacher tells about asking a group of kindergarten kids, you know, what's the purpose of the body? And a little boy shoots his hand up and says, to carry the head around.
Oh my God. They always get it right.
They always get it right. And that's what we become. You know, we think we're this head. So we really try to address the mind, which is important, and the cultivation of thoughts and the inner voice and the inner dialogue, but also the space of the heart and our emotional life. And we can do that through inspiration or yoga philosophy or mindfulness practices or Buddhist philosophy and psychology, but also through science and research. And that's important.
And there's so
much
science and research these days that show the benefits, the evidence of how much meditation and yoga can help.
And I think a lot of us need sometimes that extra support and buy-in, that it's not all esoteric, it's not just theoretical.
No, I think those kinds of articles really ground the practices. I think people really feel somehow they get permission from those.
And we're at this dynamic place in history and time where these rivers are really converging, where the science is really coming to meet a lot of the spiritual practices or the more esoteric practices. So it's a powerful time to be bringing that type of attention forward within the dialogue we share in classes.
That's so true. When did you start yoga? Your first yoga class?
Oh, gosh. I was 19. And I was in college.
Where?
I went to UCLA.
Oh, you did?
Okay. I did. So I'm born, bred Los Angelino and been here my whole life. I always wanted to go to school there. And when I got in, it was very exciting.
It's so exciting. It's an amazing school.
It was a beautiful campus. I felt really honored. I was in a very small program, so it was really touching for me.
What was the program?
I was in their theater, film, and television department. And I was disembodied, was the reality of it. I was really in my head. I was a bookworm growing up. I was not an athlete. I was never really in my physical body. And during college, it was demanding. We were asked to be in our body. I was taking ballet classes and movement classes, and it was pretty foreign to me. But in addition, I started having severe anxiety attacks, and that was new to me. And it was crippling. I would get nauseated. I would think I was going to faint or throw up. I'd break out in a sweat. My heart would start beating out of my chest. I couldn't be in restaurants.
So panic attacks.
Full panic attacks. And I called my mom and spoke to her about what was going on. And she said, why don't you start meditating again? Which was something I had done kind of as an adolescent.
That. Yeah.
That's so which is a funny story.
How did you find meditation as a teen?
My parents were not religious or spiritual in any sense. My long-running joke is if there was a holiday for a Hallmark card for it, we celebrated it.
All of them.
All of them. Yeah. And that
was fun. Equal opportunity holiday celebrators.
And I felt very loved and attended to. Always got a Valentine's Day gift or an Easter basket.
Yeah.
And it was very joyful, but it was certainly not connected to any kind of
the spiritual
understanding of what it means to be a human. But my dad had been at an event where he saw this guy named James Van Praagh speak. And he was someone who could supposedly communicate with the dead.
Ooh.
And he bought his book called Talking to Heaven. At the time, I had lost my best friend's mother had passed away from breast cancer.
Oh, gosh.
And I don't know how tuned in he was to that. I don't know how aware he was of that. But the events in my mind, who knows how accurate our memory is.
Yeah.
But in my mind, those things coincided. And I was around 12, 13 and started reading this book. And in the book, without me really knowing it, he introduced the chakras or the energy centers of the body and guided chakra meditations. And so I'd be sitting in my room, lighting candles, reading this book and taking myself through this process and had found it sort of at that age.
That's really cool.
It was neat. And I think we're open at that age and we have an open mind and we're open to things like that. And of course, life takes us in a different direction. Mm-hmm. I got into high school and went in a different direction.
Yeah.
And I think we all sort of have that journey. So it was interesting that my mom had that memory recall, and she had done yoga throughout the time that I was growing up.
Oh, she did. She practiced.
She did. I wasn't very aware of it until I was in my later years in high school, and I would get this knock on my door early in the morning. Do you want to come do yoga with me? It's like, no. Get away from my door, crazy.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that she used to do Brian Kess yoga VHS tapes.
Oh, my gosh.
And then, of course, decade and a half later, he married me and my husband.
He did?
He did.
This is all sorts of full circle breadcrumbs along the way.
So I thought, how surreal for her that Brian's up there marrying
Did she ever talk about it, that it was surreal? Because it is.
You know, she never made a big deal about it. He'd been around in our lives sort of peripherally as our teacher. She didn't have a direct contact with him, but wasn't like his name was foreign. And she never made a big deal about it, but it had to be weird.
It must have been cool, though.
Yeah, I'm sure. And so I started going to yoga per her suggestion and started meditating and started doing acupuncture. Doesn't mean I don't have moments where I'm aware that anxiety is present or the part of me that can get overwhelmed is present, but I've never had a panic attack ever again.
Ever again?
Ever again.
Well, if that's not a success story, I don't know what is, because you have the tools now to really work with it. I get very anxious, and the anxiety, I've had two kids, and both times after both my kids, I don't even think it was postpartum depression. I think it was really postpartum anxiety, and that's when I came back to meditation and I think came to your class.
I think so many women experience that. Mm. In my world, it's not really spoken about publicly. We have a lot now, and thank God, we have a lot of discussion around postpartum depression. But I think that that postpartum anxiety, especially given the world that we're living in now, it makes sense. And there are these practices that we can do to bring awareness to it. And I always say that with the caveat of it doesn't stop us from having those emotions or those moments of trepidation. But if we can see it, we're really touching into that dimension of awareness, the inner teacher. And it's from that place of knowing we have the power to make a different choice.
Yeah. And also the allowing of those feelings in and just they're here. Hey, I am feeling this way, as opposed to I think the panic of like, I don't like this and I don't know what I'm exactly dealing with, but I don't like how that feels.
And the judgment of somehow this shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And that's really the shadow work of these practices.
Right.
When we say to ourselves, the part of me that's judgmental, the part of me that's anxious, or the part of me that's sad doesn't somehow belong. And when we shut those parts of ourselves out, we're not whole.
No.
You see that in children. You know, they're whole, complete beings, and they're having all the emotions that they have.
All the emotions.
Mm-hmm. And they're not judging themselves. When they get into a fit, they don't look back and have
no
regret
shame.
Or shame. Right? And yet, as adults, we do this to ourselves. And we have to invite all of those parts in.
Yes.
I love the imagery of when we're in those moments. That's often the smallest part of ourselves. Mm. It's the youngest part of ourselves. And really to look at that part of ourselves and to say, what is this part needing right now?
Yeah.
Is it needing just to be reassured that it will be okay?
Yeah.
Is it needing a hug? Is it needing you to write down a to-do list? Would that help you feel a little more grounded?
Yeah.
And if we can ask that part of ourselves, what are you really needing, rather than trying to push that away, we can come back to a sense of steadiness and wholeness.
So true. So you went, you practiced yoga in college. Mm-hmm. The panic attacks stopped. Mm-hmm. You graduated from UCLA. Were you pursuing acting at that time?
So sort of. I did for a while, but it was really on the side. There was something about it for me that was never truly deeply fulfilling. Mm-hmm. I loved taking people on a journey.
You're so good at that.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's so natural to you.
I like telling stories, but what I like about that is the opportunity for transformation. Yeah. We can show up in a space and be feeling a certain way or have a certain perspective. Mm. And through the journey that we go on, we see things in a new way, or our mood is somehow shifted, or we see ourselves and each other in a new way. And I loved that part of it, but the whole industry wasn't right. For me, it wasn't right for my heart, wasn't right for my soul.
Yeah.
And so simultaneously, I had gotten a job while I was in college working in the fashion industry.
Okay. And what part?
So I was on the retail side of things, but as an executive, and I ran the West Coast for a retail company. So I graduated college a year early in order to run the West Coast for this company.
So underachiever.
Underachiever. Not a perfectionist. No wonder
in
there
any
was
way.
Anxiety.
Yeah. No. Why would it be there?
So at 21, I was running 9 of 26 retail locations, working 75 hours a week, 2 cell phones, the whole 9 yards. And
are you allowed to say what company?
I don't think that they're actually in business anymore.
But at the time,
I left over 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was an amazing education. That industry, again, is brutal in all of its own ways.
Yeah.
And I've learned 2 things. One is that it is important to look good, whatever that means to each individual, not based on what some external culture or dominant media is telling you looks good. Mm-hmm. But when we look good, we feel good.
Completely agree.
Whatever that means for each person. So there's a place for those things. What sucked the holy life out of my soul was teaching women that somehow the solution to the emptiness they were feeling, the heartbreak they were feeling, the disconnection they were feeling could be resolved with the next new outfit or the next $5,000 that were spent.
Yeah.
And it's a Band-Aid that has to be replaced and replaced and replaced.
Band-Aid.
It's so fast.
Yeah.
And it's a temporary fix. So it was during that time the CEO of the company gave me a tremendous business education. It was like going to grad school, and I feel very, very grateful for it. But he was a very religious man.
He was.
And when I decided I wanted to study yoga, I came to him and said, I'm going to do this teacher training. And it means something to me that isn't the same as what you believe. And I don't ever want to compare those things, a deep faith to what I'm experiencing now. But it's the equivalent for me, and it's the only time I've ever known something like this, and I want to go do this program, and it's going to cause me to shift my schedule a little bit. I'll still be here. I just have to work some different days. And he didn't love that, but he supported me in it.
That's great.
And so I did my teacher training. I was 21 or 22.
So you graduated college a year early. You did 1 year, 75-hour weeks.
I was there for 7 years.
Oh.
Not that whole time. So I ended up—
But after the first year is when you did the teacher training?
Yeah, it was the first year of the year or two after. And I stayed with the company after I did my training for a fairly long period of time. And I was always teaching. So from the time I did my training until the time I left, I was teaching anywhere from 1 to 3 classes a week. So right away I got into it. But I had the perspective that I think so many young people have of, this could never make me enough money to support me. I'd put myself through college and graduated early, had benefits, health coverage, a great salary for that age. Yeah. I was self-supported. So the idea that somehow I could make that up doing what I loved for a living
was impossible.
Felt impossible. And so I really tell even new teachers today, as I train new teachers and help to mentor them onto the path, I laid the bricks that were necessary in order to make that transition wisely. I'm not someone who says jump and the net will appear.
Yes.
It doesn't really work for my personality.
Right.
But I wove the pieces together so that eventually when the universe gave me that big kick in the butt, which it certainly did.
It did.
It caught me. And all the things that I had done over the last several years to lay that foundation were all there to support
me. There.
And right away, I had classes and a couple clients.
Private
clients, yeah, which was important. Yeah. It's a supplement for income for yoga teachers that is different than what most people don't know. It's like you think a yoga teacher is a celebrity. And when you're showing up and teaching even a packed room of people, you're making very little money.
Right. It's the private clients are much more lucrative, but then the big full classes gets you more clients. So
and the teaching hours. I mean, I think this is something that young, as the arena gets more saturated, it's like training in anything. You got to put the hours in and find your voice and who are you as a teacher so you're not a carbon copy of the person that you studied with. Mm-hmm. And you're really learning what is it that you are here to teach and making sure that your classes are fulfilling whatever that unique teaching voice is for you, which we say can take, I think, upwards of 5 years to find that voice.
Totally. I agree with you. Did you train with Brian Kest?
No, but I took classes with him over the years. I never trained with him. I trained with Annie Carpenter.
Okay.
And did my advanced teacher training with Annie. And then meditation, I've studied with Jack Kornfield and Tara Brock and Trudy Goodman and many of the teachers who were part of the mindfulness movement.
Yeah.
And over the years, I've also studied with people like Tiffany Cruikshank, and it's been important for me. You know, we always say never be a teacherless teacher. So I'm always in a training. I'm always studying with somebody. It's been an important evolution for my path because we never stop being students of these practices.
I've run into you before in the grocery store when you're on your way to a silent meditation retreat just by yourself so that you can really fill up your own reserves to come home and then teach all your classes.
And that's important. Teachers, you get onto the path, you start teaching, and it's demanding. When I first started teaching, I was teaching 25, 26 classes a week. And when you think about that in terms of drive times and days of the week
body,
and hours.
Just your own body.
Your own body. And getting nourishment that you need or getting your own practice in.
Mm.
Most people who end up on whatever their path is, and I think that this is true across professions, that you end up finding there's no space for you. And so we have to be diligent in allocating the time for our own self-study and our own practice.
Yeah.
So I have the commitment that every year I go on retreat.
I see your retreats. They look so wonderful.
And then I lead retreats. So
go
on my own for myself. Because when I'm leading a retreat, that's fantastic. And it's so joyful.
It's a ton of work.
Deep, but it is work. And I'm in the role of teacher. And when I go on retreat, I get to remove myself from that role and be really anonymous on those retreats. You're not speaking. You're not making eye contact. You get to remove all of the labels that you accumulate as you're living life. So I don't have to be anybody's teacher. I don't have to show up in any particular way.
Is that freeing in the time that you're there?
Must be. People say, how can you be silent for 10 days? That's the easiest part. Yeah. I mean, we spend our lives talking. So silence is really quite welcome.
Golden. When did you meet hubby and how? In class?
Well, we've known each other for over 13 years. Oh. So he used to teach at Brian Kest's studio. And when I was working, a girlfriend would drag me at 7 a.m. to his class.
When you were working at the fashion company.
Yeah, and we could go before work. And we met that way, and we were great friends for many, many years. And he was married, and I was in a very long-term relationship. And we just never saw each other that way. And the truth is, as a woman, he was one of the few male teachers who I felt so safe in his space.
Oh, that's
I felt like when I spoke to him, he gave me the fullness of his attention and his deep listening. But there was never any violation of boundaries.
No weird vibes.
No weird vibes. He was such a beautiful presence to be around.
Yeah.
And even over the years now, I think about the women that continue to study with him or girlfriends that I have, and they'll say, oh, you know, I see him. And then I just sort of word vomit because I feel so safe.
Deep
it
listening.
Just comes out of my
oh.
mouth. And so we had that foundation. Eventually, we moved through. He had created a program that has become quite well known called the Ultimate Yogi, and it's a 108-day yoga program. It was the first of its kind. Nothing had really ever been done like that, that mirrored what had been done with something like Tony Horton's P90X and replicated it for yoga, where there was a set calendar and accountability and classes that you could move through. Mm-hmm. And so to prepare for that, I came on to produce it and do the wardrobe and be a part of it. And there were about 30 of us that moved through this. And by the time we finished production, we had been in that tapasya, in that deep discipline for over 120 days. And everybody's lives changed. When you're in deep practice like that, you see things very clearly. I got home from production and my partner at the time, he looked at me and he said, I don't want to hear you talking about yoga anymore. And that was such a wake-up call for me. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
Because this is going to be the rest of my life.
This is what I want to do.
And during that process, I had left my job, had begun teaching full-time. I had made a major transition. And it was very clear to me, if you didn't want to hear conversation about this, it was never going to work because this was fundamentally going to be the rest of my life.
Right.
I was going to be working on weekends and leading trainings and traveling.
And super excited
and
about
healthier
passionate.
Than I'd ever been. I mean, the healthiest, the strongest, the most vibrant, the most clear I had ever been. So I left that relationship and months later found out that the same had happened for him, but also for other people in their own iterations, in their own ways. And so eventually we ended up coming together, and we were very careful about that. He had two children from his previous marriage, and we entered that very tenderly and waited a year before I was even around the kids to make sure that we were solid.
It makes nothing but I'm not surprised at all that you guys approached that with such mindfulness.
And to make sure that their mother felt like she was ready to have me in their presence. So we really tried to navigate it as best as we could for everybody. And the reality is now everybody's so happy.
That's a dream story.
And the truth always comes forward, I think, as you know, you keep trusting in the truth of your path and you keep listening deeply and applying the practice. And everyone is served by that.
Everyone. Did your husband, so was that your first job producing?
Sort of. In that kind of capacity, I'd run also a nonprofit theater company for a while.
Just a little side project.
No
big deal.
So there were things like that that were in my background.
You and your husband work very closely together now. He had the Ultimate Yogi, which you produced, but now Inner Dimensions Media is both of you.
Now we are co-CEOs and we co-run a full media production company. So we do a couple different things. And one is that we film every 2-3 months a full library of new classes. So every week, members or subscribers get a brand new class, whether that's yoga, meditation, or also personal growth. So we'll be entering into this new category of classes really soon where people can listen to talks on the things that we talk about, say, like when you come to meditation and we talk about what does it mean to live these practices off the cushion, off the mat, and in the day, how do you apply them? And so there's a new class that comes out every week. But one of the places that we really specialize in is the programming. So creating these programs that people can enter into for a set period of time. So we have an introduction to meditation program for new meditators that's 28 days.
So smart to we get have them an, in the practice.
Yeah. And people need a place to begin.
And the consistency is really.
And to have a community that you're tapped into, other people who are going through it, a calendar that you can follow. Some of that I think is really important for people that they're not just sort of on their own to pick and choose classes, that it's easy to kind of throw in the towel.
It is really easy. And yeah, when you're on a program, in a thing, with other people, it does make it much more motivating.
I think so. And then we try to set that tone of good habit is going to be made within 21 plus days. Mm-hmm. So trying to take it that extra week past it. And then we have a beginner's yoga program, and then we have more advanced programs. So we have something called Yoga 30 for 30, which is a little bit more intense. So it's just 30 minutes, pretty strong power yoga. And then another program called Journey to Yoga that I created, which interweaves yoga, meditation, breath work, but also the application of our core values to the practice.
Do you love working with him?
We have a great working relationship.
That's so good.
He's very organized, which is important. And I think kind of a rare trait. We're both very organized people.
Yeah, for both of you to be.
But he's also a visionary. And he's a big visionary. So I'm sort of the tether. And it's a good practice for both of us. He'll come at me with, oh, I have this great new idea.
All this new stuff.
And then I panic. Yeah. I was like, no. We have a long running joke about it that I shut down his dreams.
Bubble burster.
Immediately. And then 24 hours later, I come back and I say, okay,
I've thought about it.
We can make this work.
Oh, that's a really good process.
It is.
Because it all happens. It gets done.
It does all get done. And I think one of the things that's often said about women in terms of some of this work is that we don't want to put things out until it's perfect.
Yeah.
We want the logo to be perfect. We want
so
the
true.
Website to be perfect. Mm-hmm. We want the colors to be perfect. Yeah. And we end up holding ourselves back from
completely
really putting things uh-huh. out there. So over the years, we don't have the capacity or the time for things to necessarily be perfect, but we get to refine them over time.
Yeah.
And that's been a good lesson for me is that you can either put this content out there and help people around the world. I think we're in over 30 countries now.
Amazing.
And you can help people or you can wait till it's perfect and you're withholding.
And it never will be.
You'll never be satisfied.
Never.
Even when you do the revamp of the site, even when you redo everything, it could always be better.
Always.
And that's also important, right? Because we want to be, all of us want to be growing and getting better over time. But we have to be careful of those moments when we find ourselves withholding the opportunity to help and serve people.
Yeah. And I feel that you really do help and serve. And I see your work online. You've posted about you work in prisons, right?
So that came about in a really interesting way. Travis, my husband, will often say, for so many years, Lauren, there were 2 or 3 years where I kept saying to him, we need to be doing more karma yoga. I'm feeling this call to be of service. And it was very much weighing on my mind and my heart. Yeah. I felt like we had evolved on this path to a place where we now had some bandwidth and some capacity.
We should say your husband's name.
Yes.
He's Travis Elliott.
His name is Travis Elliott. And I had the bandwidth then. I wasn't in survival mode trying to make ends meet or trying to keep a roof over my
head. Had a
flourishing business, had established that foundation. And it's from that place that we need to be giving back in some way. But I didn't know what that looked like. Everything I saw were companies giving back overseas, and there's a lot of needs all over the world. But then I look in my own backyard, I grew up here, and mm-hmm. I drive down the street, and I see a lot of need
everywhere
that's surrounded by a lot of privilege. And so I felt very conflicted. Where would that work be done? And one day I got an email that said, would you ever come and teach yoga in this maximum security prison in Maine? And when I Googled
maximum
security prison in Maine on the complete opposite side of the country, and when I Googled the location, it was an hour away from a small town we happened to be traveling to in a few months.
Seriously.
So we said,
how do you say no?
No, absolutely. We said, absolutely, we'll be there. And so
was Travis as into it as you were?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he was. And we both have a passion for the environment mm-hmm. and nature is very important to us. But this fell into our laps. And I had studied social justice in college. I had studied the prison industrial complex. So it
you
was
had?
Something. Yeah.
The little side theater, the acting business.
It was one of the most popular executive. Classes at UCLA at the time, taught by a professor named Peter Sellers, who people loved.
Not the actor.
But it was a very popular course that was in an auditorium. I mean, it was amazing. But I learned a lot about this particular issue inside of our country. And so as he learned more about it, I think he got more excited about the potential of the work. So we showed up in Maine and we went to this prison without knowing very much.
Okay.
And what we came to learn was that the warden at the time, who is now the head of corrections for the state of Maine at this particular moment in time, but his name was Warden Liberty.
That's his name.
That's his name, Warden Liberty. And he had allowed for there to be computer screens in solitary confinement that were preloaded with certain content that they chose and approved, covered in plexiglass, and the men had access to a mouse. And they could click through the content and choose whatever program was on there to support them during their time in solitary confinement. So for people that aren't familiar, when we talk about solitary confinement, these guys are in their cell 23 hours a day, 6 days a week, 24 hours a day, 1 day a week. In the 1 hour that they were allowed out at the time, it was in a small confined area where they could basically walk in circles. So one of the men, and it's quite common, of course, that people who are kept in circumstances like this fall into very, very deep depressions.
Of course they do.
Of course. And it's inhumane. And
it is inhumane.
And it causes psychosis, yes, and all sorts of
we
deep issues.
We are not meant to be all by ourselves.
No. And disconnected in this way from touch and any kind of real authentic connection. And so this particular prisoner attempted to kill himself. Mm. And when he got back, and luckily his life was saved, they put him back into solitary, which is hard enough, mind-blowing as it is. And he went to the computer and he found one of Travis's yoga classes from the program that we produced.
Warden Liberty, we need more wardens like that.
And so he started going through the whole program. And when it was time for him to be released from solitary, he had been one of the most challenging prisoners in the entire facility. But he revolutionized his behavior. He heard things in these classes that he had never heard before about choices that he could make or ways of responding rather than reacting. And he didn't want to leave solitary because he wouldn't be able to finish the program. So he refused to leave.
Is Travis so proud of this story?
Oh, we...
Because this would, I don't know, this would make me sort of glow.
We are proud of this guy who we're close with and continue to be very close with. We're proud for the affirmation that yoga works. Because it's one thing to come from the privileged places that we do and the educated and the family-centric places that we do and to feel like yoga saved your life because it stopped you from having anxiety. But then when you go into situations like this and you see it fundamentally saving people's lives and putting them on an entire new course of opportunity and potential, that brings you to your knees and humbles you.
Oh, I bet.
So he was eventually given the program and a DVD player so that he could finish it outside of solitary. And when he left, they asked him if they started a yoga program. And the teachers of that program, Piers and Jess, they run a program called Liberation Institute. They asked him if you could have any teacher come, who would you have? And he said, Travis and Lauren. So they emailed us and we came and we got to have this beautiful 2-day experience with them. And we've been back several times since and we'll be going back again in November.
I love this story. How many inmates participate?
So this is a fairly small group. We are in a maximum facility. So people are there for serious crime. And they're also, many of them are there for life. They're there for what will end up being the rest of their lives. Not all of them. This particular inmate, he will be out within the next 6 years now. So the group tends to be somewhere between about 12 and 18 participants. These participants have all achieved their 200-hour yoga teacher training certification.
They have?
They have.
They are yoga teachers?
They are yoga teachers.
Oh, I didn't know that component of it.
So Liberation Institute, Jess in particular, goes in and leads a 200-hour training and has trained these men to teach beautiful yoga classes.
Really?
And what we've come in to do is a continuation of that. So they're receiving their 300-hour certifications now. So they've all been trained at the 500-hour level. And we come in and we provide continuing education. So we come in and we talk about yoga philosophy, sequencing yoga classes, but we also on our last visit did 2 full days of training them to teach mindfulness meditation.
You did.
Yes.
Did the one inmate, the one who had been in solitary, is he also into meditation teaching now?
Absolutely.
Oh.
So now they're going back into population, and they've been doing this beforehand, but they go back into the general population and they teach to the general population beginner's yoga, yin yoga, and now they're teaching meditation classes specifically.
Oh my God.
And then this guy would go back into solitary once he was released and teach classes to the guys who were in solitary.
He would.
And then when we were there the last 2 times, we go back and see the guys who are in solitary.
You do?
So we go deep, deep, deep into the prison and get to teach the guys who were there.
How is that?
It's beautiful and it's hard.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to see them. And the second time that we went, one of the guys who was there the first time with a smile on his face, he said, "See, I told you I was going to keep doing yoga."
He did.
And he kept showing up and he kept doing it.
That's really beautiful. I have a friend whose father was in prison till the end of his life.
Mm.
He was in solitary confinement the entire time. And my friend and the siblings of my friend have never stopped fighting against it. It's so inhumane. It's so horrible. It's just very upsetting, their stories about it. It's terrible. So I think what an incredible thing you guys are doing.
It's a place where we need a lot of rehabilitation in this country. And it's important to bring attention to. It's important to talk about. And it's important that we remember that there can be hope and redemption in the darkest of places.
So true.
And that no human being is without the potential for that redemption.
For now, growth, change, redemption, all of it.
All of it.
Yeah.
And not everybody is going to choose that. That's why there aren't 100 people in these trainings, in these classes. But for the ones who are exposed to it and want the opportunity, we need to step up and give them the support that they need so they walk out with a skill.
You have a little bun in there.
I do.
A little girl bun.
Little girl bun cooking away.
Cooking away. Your first child.
My first baby, yes.
She is due mid-February, maybe Valentine's Day.
Yeah, we will see where she lands.
We'll see.
We're not going to rush her.
No, take your time. Take your time in there. But we have shared, you and me, we have both had, you had one miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
I had three. Mm-hmm. One before, and then I had my child, my first child, then 2 in the middle, then I had my second one. And I just think for anybody who might be listening, it's very common and it's very huge when it happens. But look at you.
It was amazing to me when we navigated it, how important it felt to us to come out
to
and share that.
Yeah.
And to share the skills with which we navigated that and how we put our practice into action to navigate that. But I think more than anything, people can have these outside perceptions of people in the wellness space, in the health space.
Your life is perfect.
Perfect. Look at
you.
You
never get upset.
Right. Oh, how dare you?
You're not anxious.
You never get angry. Mm-hmm. You never get upset, or you never have things go wrong in your life.
Mm-hmm. And just hashtag blessed all the time.
All the time. Mm-hmm. And we do. We have a beautiful life. We've created a beautiful life. We travel all over the world. We love what we do. We're happy. There are a lot of things that are very beautiful through and through, but that doesn't mean that we're not facing all the challenges that everyone faces. And I think there can be such stigma around pregnancy loss, like there's something wrong with
or
you.
You did something wrong, or you were careless or irresponsible. Yeah, all of those. Because with you, I think, did you say on Instagram that it had happened after the 12-week mark? Am I right?
So we had the loss at 11 weeks.
At 11 weeks, right there.
Right there.
Yeah.
So we were so close to sharing. And luckily we hadn't shared with, I have also 2 stepchildren.
Yes, your blended family. You talked to me about them.
And so we didn't tell the kids. Luckily, we had withheld. We knew we were going to wait and share once we got past that first trimester. But we had told other people, and to have to then write that email and share that news.
Ugh, I've done that.
And even now, like here I am, I'm about to go in for my 20-week appointment.
So exciting.
Oh, so exciting. But there's that little voice in my head who's composing a scary email.
Yeah.
And this is where the mindfulness practice really helps, where I can acknowledge that that voice is there, that vulnerability and that fear, and I can take care of that part of myself. And I can put my attention in a place that's much more useful for both of us.
So true. By the time I had my second child, I had had so many miscarriages, you know, 3, one before, 2 in the middle. that with Ray, I was truly in a place people would be like, it's so amazing. I'm like, it is. It is. We'll see. 25 weeks. I was like, yes, probably really great. We will see.
And it's hard. I've felt that way at times in this journey where I will be so excited after we have an appointment and the midwife listens with a Doppler and we can hear her heartbeat. Yeah. And then a couple weeks later, that trepidation comes back in. Yeah. And it's been quite the dance and the early lesson in yes. parenting and motherhood of yes. letting go and letting go of control.
Letting go of control. That's exactly what it was. And I felt that the only way that I could really get there was having had these experiences so that when people, what do you mean? I'm like, no, I mean that from a place of like, yes, I hope we'll see. I'm not sure.
And I think
even up till the very end.
Yeah. It's just so important for women to know that, or families and pregnant people to know that you're not alone.
Yeah.
Because I think even now I've had students share, I had a pregnancy loss, not knowing that I had had one. And just being able to say, so have I, and here are two other women in the room
oh, yeah.
who navigated it around the same time.
Right.
And how relieved they look. It's as if there's this look on their faces that they thought they were the only ones.
Yeah, I know. A sorority that a lot of us belong to.
And I know more people who've navigated pregnancy loss than who haven't.
Same. So many of us.
Mm-hmm.
So we share that. Your classes are some of my favorites. You teach at Yoga Collective in Venice, mm-hmm. besides your online courses.
Mm-hmm.
You teach at Unplug Meditation.
I do.
Twice a week?
Twice a week still.
That's where I met you.
Yeah.
I've also been to Yoga Collective. Her classes are great.
Thank you.
Are you going to take some time off when you have your little
Yeah, I'll keep the bunny? Schedule that I have. So I had started paring down my schedule the year before we knew we were going to get pregnant. And
Smart.
Yeah, just starting to make that transition and getting comfortable with that. So I'll keep the schedule that I have. And then I'll take February whenever she comes, and then March and April I'll take off. And then we actually have a retreat to Greece. May 2nd to May 8th. So she'll be an international traveler
yeah,
at about
will.
2 months.
We have to go take Lauren's class.
Thank you.
She's been on the cover of Yoga Journal. She's a goddess yogi. And I'm so grateful that you came today. Thank you.
No,
I'm
thank
so
you.
Excited I'm, to meet your girl.
Thank you. I can't wait to share her. And I'm so honored to be on the path with you.
Me too. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please click subscribe and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. If you love what we're about and feel called to recommend us, please tell your friends. If you want to make a donation, you can find us on patreon.com/greatnessadjacent. Dreamers in Action are beacons for us all.